Blog Talk Radio.
Haven't been on for a while. Still trying to approach and deal with some of the issues, health issues, and various things that are going on. Also, I'm trying to regroup and create another level of broadcast. And it's taking a little bit, but anyway, I'm glad to be back. Tonight, I'm going to share thoughts of what's going on in this country. In the world, various news clips about ISIS and the things that are going on in the Middle East, the operation of terror, hatred, greed, all the things that are the things that we're not supposed to be about anywhere in this world, no matter what religion or belief that you have. During the time that we're seeing biblical equations coming through right in front of you. There was a program on the news today about how individuals are doing smash things, go around to people's places of business and smash through the window and steal things. You have an uprise of bank robberies and murders, families fighting. Everything is non-peaceful today. Years ago, we had some things like this from riots, but not something that goes on daily. This is not even riot. This is just people surviving. The survival is because of the fact that jobs, even though they keep telling you jobs are supposed to be in there, in Illinois they're talking about 50,000 jobs coming, but what quality of jobs, and even if they have 50,000 jobs, you think of the fact that they're bringing more and more people from foreign countries here. They're being included into the need of work, and many of them are getting jobs before we are because they're bilingual or able to speak other languages or whatever. The quality of jobs that we Americans used to enjoy is not here, not like it used to be. I went to the city last week, and while there, came back and ended up at the train station. I was stranded at the train station. While I was there, there were two men that were in their late 50s, 60s that were homeless. At first, when I saw them, I was like, you know, questioning safety. I never questioned that before because I've been around homeless people before, but today you just don't know because of the fact that people now are at a stage that the thought process of zombieism is right here at the door. So when I was standing inside the door, which is normally closed, but this one particular train station was open, it was quite late, it was almost going on midnight. One of the men started talking to me as the other one lay asleep in a very cold train station. He was telling me his woes, and he was saying that he was in his late 50s and he hadn't worked in a long time, and he had to get small jobs that were offered up, like removing snow and picking up trash, and the local stores would give him, you know, a little bit of food, or he had to go dumpster dumping, you know, jumping, going in the dumpsters looking for food or whatever. I asked him, how long have you been on the street? He had told me he was on the street for 27 years. And his associate had been on the street for 38 years at least. Both of them were sick. See, these people on the street are not in the grounds that you think. You know, people think that the homeless, you know, have all these resources. But again, the resources are going to families, as he was stating. And then the men out here are just out here. And even the families are not even getting resources because I've seen women with husbands and children. One man in the city with even a chicken in the summertime on the street, 8th Street in Chicago. Not getting anything, not even getting any help or benefits. I asked him, the gentleman, I said, well, what kind of work were you in? And he was in construction. Many construction workers work seasonal, and if there's no work, they end up in a situation with no money and barely to live on. And the thing is that some of them get their work back when it gets, springtime, because if they're injured, like this guy, it showed me he had surgery on his arm. His muscles were almost completely gone and injured in one arm. He was telling me about he had surgery on his kidneys. I gather they drink because of the fact that it's so cold out. The alcohol warms them up just somewhat. So they say, hey, and then what would you do if you're in a dastardly situation, you have nothing? And anyway, the way he was getting liquor was cleaning up stores, and they were giving him liquor. It's even worse than this. There are reports on YouTube, videos of homeless people, countless numbers of them, missing, just vanishing. One report was this one individual had gone to find out what happened to the homeless in his area, because he kept seeing different people. So anyway, he went in this area and he started looking into where these people were going, and he found out that there was a special number that anybody saw homeless people in this town to call this number, and it was ambulance service. Then he called the ambulance service, which is on the tape, it's on YouTube, he got greeted by a woman through the dispatch, and he said that they sent a different unit out to pick the homeless up. And she had no idea where they were leaving them off because they weren't going to the normal shelters. So then people were estimating these people are being thrown into these FEMA camps they have set up, walled in, protected, kept out of view of our eyes. And the thing that's scary is, what are they doing with these people? Are they experimenting on them? Same thing with hospitals now. Hospitals are becoming a huge conglomerate of universities tied into medical facilities, tied into special scientific laboratories. They're doing large amounts of experiments on people. Some of them are clinical test studies. Those test studies are paying people a dollar amount for doing or taking medications, not testing. You know, you get twinked. That's what I call it, for giving up your right of life or body. Some people are saying that some states, people are selling their body parts, their kidneys and things, just to fund and feed their families because they don't have any money. This is what I'm talking about. This is scary. People at other levels are not seeing that yet, but they will see it because everything's trickling downward, spiraling from the so-called wealthy that we think is wealthy here in the United States, the millionaires, and the still middle class. They're all spiraling down into this conglomerate of being no longer with wealth, but falling into this pathway of a conglomerate of people that have nothing. African-Americans used to rely on set-asides. That was going on for years from the 60s. And we hear civil rights leaders say, oh, well, you know, this is going to get set aside from the government. We're getting set aside for this program and that. Well, they're not doing set-asides anymore. And the leadership that we had is dwindling down. There was no replacement for that leadership because, again, we got into a concept after the 60s of hearing people saying that we don't need any leaders. We need no one to lead us. We're all individuals. We don't need nothing. So with not having nothing, we get nothing. Everybody else has leaders. We don't. African Americans don't. Not really anymore. You have the trickling in of some of the civil rights movements from the movers of the 60s. You have, you know, people like Reverend Al Sharpton. You have Reverend Jesse Jackson occasionally comes out, but not like he did before. And others, shrinking population of those people that were there, that were supposed to provide support for African Americans, they're going and they're almost gone. I was appalled the other day to read an article that the publication of Johnson Publishing Company, Jet Magazine, along with Ebony, is failing into a deep, huge pocket of non-existence because of mismanagement. I was appalled because I recall in 1951, my dad left the Amsterdam News in New York with a publication that he was trying to get put on the press. It was called Jet Magazine. My father had gone to Easton's Campbell, and I think he was the one that designed the first cover. And he took that cover over to his friend Langley Waller, he went to school with in New York. But he was heading to Chicago because he was going to move his career back to Chicago because he had made a pretty large name for himself worldwide. So he came here to Chicago and bring his publication, Jet, and had it printed by Johnson Publishing Company that had a printing press. Well, lo and behold, when he went here and came back to basically marry my mom and bring her back to Chicago, he was living in New York then, by the time he almost got on the train here, he found out Johnson had already published Jet Magazine without him. And basically was sitting on the street, and he said, you know, and my mom, I remember these arguments. And the thing was that it went on for years of what I heard, that Johnson, you know, basically stole his publication. And Time Warner was involved in it. And then the thing was that, you know, as a little girl, I was listening and hearing everything because they kept letting me be privy to things that was important to keep our family business going. And I did stay abreast of what was going on. I didn't say to myself, well, I'm going to do something different and let my family name and legacy lay. I felt very honored and very confident that that name needed to be out, but the other people could be able to pick up a ring and understand that they could do something themselves. One of the people I'm very proud of, I have never met him, was Magic Johnson. He did a lot from going from sports to actually going to a businessman, a very prominent businessman, to say the least. But the thing was that I heard his arguments, and then anyway, he came and after threats of Hoop, he became the managing editor, Jad, and associate editor of Ebony. But then my dad also had other publications he was involved in. He was also the co-owner of the New Crusader. He wrote for Sepia. He wrote for Look, Time, Life. He wrote under alias names. A lot of people did back then because they wanted to put certain stories out in certain media and truth on the other side. And also during that time, too, my dad was involved with the Nation of Islam, and they had a column in Pittsburgh Courier called The Messenger for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The whole issue, folks, is at that time, Set Magazine was 15 cents, and it was filled with news. You had reporters on the street, reporters that went out in the community and reported actually what was going on. And people got involved, and during the time, people were saying, well, we're not going to have it. It was different, different then. We're not going to have these things happen to our people. Even though they were happening, it was more involvement with the black community. We didn't have civil rights, but we had rights amongst our own people. But we tried to stand ground because everybody knew how horrible it was to go through the situation of being down south or being through slavery, or having family members beaten and fettered and tarred and hung and murdered. People stood up then and refused to stand down. So anyway, when my dad put this publication out, and he came into some type of agreement with Johnson Publishing Company, he was there for about, I'm not sure how long. I recall that it was an argument, the fact that Johnson didn't like that he was putting out CD, I found out, allegedly. But he had my father train John Johnson Jr. on how to put out Jet Magazine. Once my dad began to train him, that was the stake in the way, because that's when Johnson decided to get rid of him, because now his son knew how to publish and put together Jet Magazine. He thought to make it work. Well, from that time on, it was popular. It was more popular than Jet, the Ebony magazine. It was smaller, and it was very easy for people to carry, and it had news in it. And it went on for a while until John Johnson Jr., who I talked to, had died. And his name was Robert Johnson, by the way, not John Johnson, sorry. He had passed on. And then the family started using, you know, other methods to put the publication out. Eunice was more or less involved with the fashion fair and the fashion shows, but as far as the publication was concerned, it started dwindling down. The cost factor went up. More and more printing press around the United States started folding up because everything started going media related based on the new levels of computers and things going on, software. And then eventually things were moving and winding into where it is now. And I saw that. Luckily, when I went into working in companies, I worked for a corporation, Fortune 100 Corp. I learned everything from accounting, computers, every level of data processing, including programming. Doing computer and analysis work. I learned every aspect of business, hands-on. And that's how I was able to scope through, even today, with the knowledge I have, and I keep abreast of what's going on, because, see, I saw that the future rarely would be into levels of having more and more computer-based, controlled technology. And the old technology of writing things down and having them in computers. I saw the change begin in accounting. When I worked in accounting was, you know, double entry systems, and what happened was it went in the computer, and eventually people said, well, we don't need to keep backup paper. They're failing too, because the amount of paper was being used back in the day was unsurmountable. Everything was on paper and disk and tape. And the thing was that all these businesses were thriving because more and more of that was being consumed, and there was demand for more and more people to work in those jobs. The normal industries are not there anymore. So we started seeing more and more of the technology taking away the industry jobs that we needed. Even in accounting, it got to the level that they didn't need a whole full staff of workers working on spreadsheets and adding machines. All they had to do was just program some numbers and scan paper in, and all the things would be done directly off the computer. It got more and more sophisticated. Keep our job leaders and the tug, the graph equipment, individuals and people who were using typewriters, all that stuff went out the wall. And more of the companies started downsizing and going into a situation that they did not need the workers anymore. And then it got to a point where they could afford cheaper labor to go overseas, and that was when NAFTA came. I saw all this stuff, to move us away from having libraries and books and information written. Everything has become a situation of based on a computer or a microchip, or something you hand and you hold in your hand. The idea of what this represented was supposed to be worldwide intelligence. No longer will you need to write, think. The thinking is done for you by something else. When you lose that right of thinking, that's when they totally control you. And at any time, they can snap the button. And then when that button goes off and there's no electric and there's no phone and there's no Wi-Fi and there's no internet connection, modem or any way or wise, then what happens? You have nothing. You have no books because they told people not to print any books anymore. It was too costly. You have nothing to reference anything from because once that dark button hits, I mean that time when everything stops and stands still, where are you going to go for reference? Where are you going for information? How are you going to understand how to build a car or straighten out a problem with a television or anything when all of the information has gone completely technological, and then eventually one day the plugs are gone and all of the hard written proper writing that was there is gone? And the thing is, too, with new technology, we're running into more and more children can't read. They can read what's on there, but it's kind of dyslexic, but people can read the computer, but understand very little in logic and discerning of understanding what's happening, because it's become everything that's been done for us. We've lost the ability to do for ourselves. Somehow, what am I doing? Going down back to Johnson Publishing Company. Well, Johnson Publishing Company, at one point, I went to the store about 3-4 years ago, and I saw the Jet magazine price, and it was skyrocketing almost up to $3-4 a copy. And I was like, whoa. And then when I saw that, I said, people don't have that money to buy that. So the thing is, they did not have enough commercial advertising to foot the bill. So they were beginning to fail then. And I started seeing the whole publication skyrocketing down, and now today they're talking about they can't hold their head above water. They can't. And the same thing with the Chicago Defender, same thing. We had people, newspaper men going out and, you know, reviewing, looking at stories and finding out what's going on in the neighborhood, and people in the neighborhood would report back, and we had a little bit of impact, real impact on what could be done. But we had a few civil rights leaders still, you know, out there. We had Reverend Evans and various other ones, people that were out there fighting for the cause out there in the 60s and stuff. So the thing we had also, Stokely Carmichael and various other individuals out there, you know, with, you know, Black Power movement. And people were making a way, you know, change the way that people were approaching African Americans. Well, the newspapers started going, so the stories started going, and we had to rely totally for our stories to be approached through the white press. Well, when Harold Washington ran for mayor the second time, the first time he was totally ignored. The second time I got so angry. I got sick of seeing people marching outside CBS headquarters, which was next door to where I lived, protesting the fact that Mayor Harold Washington, and then the incumbent running for mayor against Bernie Ecton. And Bernie Ecton was saying any and everything about Harold Washington on TV. It was disgusting. I could not even believe that they would allow anyone to come on and say what he was allowed to say and allege on television. So my mom looked at me and she asked me, she said, go do something about this. And I just couldn't even believe she asked me this, but the thing was that I, based on her telling me that I could do anything, change anything, be anything. The same information was given to me by my dad. It was a situation that if you saw something, you could look at it and analyze it and figure out quickly how to straighten the matter out. I was very good at that because I've always been kind of analytical. So anyway, I looked at this and I went by one day and there was Reverend Rivick standing out there with a protest sign. And I told him I was Dan Burrow's daughter. He immediately offered me to come over to push. And when I came there, he said, any place you want to be, anywhere. So I took over the media coalition. I took it over and I brought the media to push to explain themselves. I did a whole level of activism, and I created an impact where the press actually came in the Black community and started listening and doing the right thing. Because see, the dollars that were basically keeping things on air was coming out of the Black community. I kept Brian Cumble's job. I mentioned that before, new operation push through letter writing campaign. I forged that. My mother liked Brian Gumbel. So anyway, I had these letters I drew up from the law firm I was working and brought it to Operation Push, and I handed it to people and told them to copy it and give it to their cousins and tell them to copy it. And they all sent this duplicate letter in talking about they would not buy products and services or anything during the time that Channel 5 was on. And that caused them to keep Brian Gumbel on. And the other woman was basically let go. We could do much then. Today, we look for others to do for us. It's kind of like John Kennedy's speech, ask not what the country can do for you, ask what you can do for the country. Basically, it means do for yourself. Because if you rely on the government, this is where we are right now, today, where we are today. There's no jobs because government is controlled by corporations. Now, why do I know this? Because I worked for corporations at level. I saw what was going on way back in the 60s and 70s, how things were changing and moving ground into where we are currently. We have people here that refuse to understand and listen to what's going on. Person that's telling you something that's not true, but I'm trying to explain the history to set yourself free from where you are right now currently, because this thing is going to be nasty when things are done, because we're re-drifting right back to Adolf Hitler's Germany. We're going back to ancient Rome. We're going back to ancient times when you had things like Pompeii blow up. This is how bad this situation is if it continues like it is. Why the people are sitting there asleep. That's why they put the programs on for zombies, because we are walking, living dead, not realizing what is ahead of us and not seeing what's behind us. Our future lays in whether or not we understand and then look to ourselves and understanding and equating how you can stop this without violence or killing. You don't have to do any of those things. You have the ability to stop this nightmare. Currently, we have ISIS. ISIS, what is ISIS? I have a historical reference from way back and the reference to where it is now and how it's going to impact us in the future. ISIS was a goddess of Egypt. You say, what does that got to do with ISIS? ISIS is a goddess of ancient Egypt, and she was married to Osiris, and that's why they used the name Isis. Isis represents many facets. There was the Isis project that was here in the United States, scientific project. There's Isis, the goddess, the female, the woman that was the god that was sent down from the heavens of Lilith and all these other lines. They even go to the Bathsheba, the Shebas, and Cleopatra. It is very important that people understand the history in order for them to deal with what's going on currently in the future. ISIS was considered, at one point, people thought them to be assassins. People fear them right now because they were called assassins. But again, ISIS, the one we're looking at right now, I'm looking at it as being black ops sent in through something, someone here in this country to cause a situation for us to go in full-fledged World War III is the stuff that we just went through. It was weak. Just like World War I was weak, World War IV, what we're looking at, is going to be as bad as World War II. Same culprit, same individuals, same people involved, their descendants involved, their families involved. Now they have gotten so advanced with the technology, they can look in your door, they can look in your window, they can look in your house, they know what you did before. It's not ghosts, it's not UFOs, it's not nothing that you would equate as being supernatural. It's just what they know what to do with technology today. They have advantages on us more than we have ever, ever, ever experienced in this time. Maybe in ancient Sumeria and the ancient cultures way long before us, they had the same technology, and that's why it busted down, and then we ended up almost in caves again. And I really believe that it was advanced technology at one time that stopped because of the same situation we're getting ready to go through now. But make it plainly clear, ISIS was trained by the CIA. ISIS is now talking about what they're doing, and the government is saying, let's go attack Iran. Now, Iran has nothing to do with ISIS. ISIS is Egyptian and is Muslim. And most of Iran is a whole different cultural difference. You know that Iranians were not ever tied to Iraq, and they were not connected to Saudi Arabia. So how do you equate the Muslims involved in the same nation? Why is ISIS killing people, Japanese people, individuals, and stirring up all this violence all over the place? Who are they really affiliated with? We have to look at the history and then understand where they stand today. We've had situations of people talking about how right now the situation is coming out of the Vatican where they're getting ready to order things and words are being spread out here that we're going to see some chancellor appoint somebody in Germany that's going to be the new Adolf Hitler of this time. You think how dangerous that's going to be. you think of where we're going directly on that. I happened to look at the movie Pompeii, and I saw something that opened my mind to something that clearly is not being ingested by us. In Rome, the Roman symbol was the eagle. In ancient Rome, that symbol was the power of Egypt, of Caesar, the eagle. Then you look at Adolf Hitler's Germany. Look at the symbol for that country. It was the eagle. Look at the symbol today here in the United States, the eagle. United States and Germany and Rome are all the same. They represent what it was. Ancient Rome was putting together, conquering, dividing, and assimilating people, countries, worldwide. Is that what we're going through right now? Am I envisioning this right, or am I wrong, and what do you see? But if you look at symbols, and it's not just me, you look at it yourself, and you see these eagles around from ancient Rome to the situation of Germany, and look where we are now. You'll see that it's the same symbol then, and it's the same symbol now. It's the same people. To worsen this situation, what is going on right now is there's threatened attack against Chicago, threatening attacks here in the United States. Why are they doing this? And then I'm hearing, too, that they're getting ready to sell Willis Tower and Sears Tower in Chicago. Is that going to be another one of these September 11 events that they're gearing up? It seems as though they're trying to destroy the whole infrastructure. They're trying to destroy us from internally, morally, realistically, every type of way so that we won't have any way to fight back. We have nothing. Nothing. The police are, you know, working for the government. If you look in the municipal code, it's not working for people. They come out. Some of them do what they are supposed to allegedly do, but a lot of them don't. And a lot of the police we got now are not police from here. They're from somewhere else, corporate police. They're on the street with guns. And you ask them for identity now. Even on my, I had a traffic stop in Bolingbrook. And the traffic stop was because my plate light was out, and the plate light screw was loose, which is commonly a warning ticket. Instead, I went through a grueling hour of somebody refused to give me identity, information on the identity, telling me they had no card, no reference. The police department refused to, adhere to sending out a supervisor on the street. I had to go to the police department to seek that person out. And two squad cars pulled over to stop me. Now, I'm a former deputy of the court. Work traffic in the beginning. And none of that's supposed to happen because it's all under Illinois state statute of law. I went into court and I watched the kangaroo court go on. What's going on in these courts is obscene. They want you to have cell phones. In fact, in the state of Illinois, you can't even have a camera up to film anything that's done illegally by the police department, police on the street, law enforcement, because you can be immediately arrested. It's a law that they put on the books. Also included in this is a law that you cannot bring a phone, camera phone, or anything in the courtroom. And then when I was working in court at one point, they even said you couldn't even pull out a pencil to write down anything because they don't want witnesses to what is going on. If you read the history of Sodom and Gomorrah, it was the same thing. The courts were railroading people in that were Sumerians. They would not get fair trials, and then the next thing they were put in the street and put in a situation where they would eventually starve them to death and stone them. Torture Sumerians or anyone outside the fold of their area coming in. That was one of the sins that caused the angels of God to come in and wipe out Sodom and Gomorrah and turn it into dust. Are we looking at that happening here today? Because, see, the same earthly-bound beings and the same situation of God being here, it's still here. There's no difference. And in the end, all the evil that we have shed blood onto this planet and done things that are outside the realm of what we're supposed to do will be viewed. And then what will be next? Another Sodom and Gomorrah destruction? Another destruction of like Pompeii and various other countries because of the stupidity and this mindset of whatever these entities are that are doing these things. And they're not talking Martians either. These are bleeding individuals, people that bleed like we do. These are the individuals that are doing this and creating this mockery of this world and this country. We sit there and say, well, we're Democrats and Republicans, and we look at the format of what that's supposed to represent. But you know what? There's no Democrat or Republican. It is just a way to get you to watch the gladiator game. The gladiator game is taking your young children and sticking them in these war zones and having them come back crippled on the glory of saying that they're coming to represent the United States to protect the rights of other citizens. Are we actually protecting the rights of the other citizens when their land has been bombarded with radiation and other types of weapons? The children have been harmed and taken away from them, or bombs go off and families die. Is that representing the good nature of the United States saving people in Marnik run areas from tyranny, oppression? I don't think so. You know, I'm telling you these things to try to wake up people out there. I've been trying to do this all along, and it's gotten to the point where it's been so hardly saturated. I don't think we can even turn back unless we all decide to use our minds and stop playing the game and take the blue pill and start working with one another and start vilifying everybody around us and laughing at other individuals that have less than we do. Or hurting or harming family members or doing things that are outside the realm of what everybody's supposed to do. In order to survive this, everyone has to come together, family, friends, community. That's what I saw when I grew up. That was there. Now, this is now, and it is not here. We have people out here right now that have no being and understanding of a soul. There are people out here that have no consciousness. They don't have any remorse for anything that they've done. There are people out here that are suffering in pain and other people inflicting huge amounts of pain on them because they're down right now and they see them down, so they feel that they have strength over the underdog and decide that it's good to destroy that person because they're not happy with themselves. This world is becoming a very horrible haven. And we're seeing more and more volcanoes erupt around. We're seeing a change in the atmosphere. The temperature is freezing cold. I think how many people died just up until now in March because of the weather changes. Think of all the people that have died from flu and influenza and various other diseases that have been man-made. You know, we talk Ebola. I heard that typhoid's coming back. Those are all diseases that are made in laboratories. The way it functions is that you have scientists sit there and they look at equations. Well, what could cause somebody to get sick? What's this and what can you do if you mix this together in that? Well, you come up with diseases, and then you come up with a cure of diseases, and then you do test studies, and you do these things at a scientific level. And then once an idea has come out and has been approved by the Food and Drug Administration, then this is when the doctors kick in, and doctors diagnose you with these diseases, determine whether or not you have it, or if they don't even determine, you might have it because they are trying to experiment to see if these drugs will work, and you fall in the game. And then you have the country president forcing us to sign up on health care. Nobody should force anybody to do anything. If they don't want health care, they don't need to get health care. If they do want health care affordable, you had the Medicaid program that all they had to do is tweak that a little in each of the areas of the country, not do a whole overload and create this monster we got now. It doesn't cover anything. Doesn't really take care of you traveling to or from the hospital. Doesn't protect your rights. If you run out of money with these HMOs, you know what? They won't pay the bill and you can't go to the doctors or your condition goes worse and worse. This is what our country's become. Not a solution-based country, but a country that is just involved with to keep and protect the haves. The have-nots are going down, and they're going down in numbers. The whistleblowers I know, Rodney Stitch and various other individuals that have been out there, John Cameron. I can go on for days. All these people work for INS, work for air traffic control. I can go on for days. Even the guy that knew about what was going on with the stand-up down order, the Vice President Dick Cheney, he was on my show just a month after 9/11, and he came on there talking about the stand-down. And that was in 2000. They had him on show either 2001 or 2002, just right after, around that time. And he made clear what he heard. But it took all the way to from 2001 and 2002 for them to determine that there was somebody that received a report that stand down, meaning don't operate, don't do anything, let this just ride through. Stopping any planes from going up to basically shoot down the plane that was heading right in the World Trade Center building. You know, if somebody shot the plane down, I know it would have been horrific. But then it wouldn't be hundreds and thousands of lives being affected from the tyranny that happened right after 9/11. Now, again, Silverstein went in and he brought a $100,000 insurance policy on those buildings through Zurich Corporation. And the thing was, after he paid that money to them, he got it and borrowed it from the friend that he had. He had information prior that this was going to happen. Nobody questioned him on it. They allowed him to go. Nobody questioned Dick Cheney about the fact that he said stand down and allowed planes to go in the building, even the one in the Pentagon. Again, we don't question. We vote him back in. And then you had the situation, why would the president of the United States declare war about Iraq when Iraq wasn't even involved with bin Laden in any kind of way? But the president was, he knew bin Laden because bin Laden lived in his encampment in Texas for a while and trained with the CIA. They had a different name, cover name. So why is it so difficult for us to see what's wrong with this picture? And why was it nothing done? Now, I'm going to tell you, if it happened and under the president's administration today, under Obama, people would storm the Bastille because it was somebody out of the other president's realm. Nobody did anything. That president, by the way, his family, that isn't even his real family name, Bush. Whole different family name, pictures of him with the Third Reich. Pictures of them with the Third Reich tied into the American Nazi Party, tied into the Nazis. And then the thing is, we don't even realize these things and we vote these people in. Truman, the president of the United States, he was the grand wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. So you think about what rights African Americans had, but Truman wasn't that bad, but again, the grand wizard for the Ku Klux Klan as a president. That should tell you where this country lays. Is it for democracy and freedom when you have individuals from the black community are suffering right now? You have an African-American president that is not doing anything for the black community, even though black people say, well, we got one in, so what does that mean? To me, it means nothing. Hasn't done anything effectively to stop all these things.
you have to be a president, not only of foreign countries or doing diplomatic things and waving your hand. You're president, and you have to be able to be diplomatic and understand foreign policy, and you're supposed to also understand policy here in the United States in order to couple the created situation where people feel that they have some type of inequality. Otherwise, we're no different than indentured serfs. We're not moving better high ground. We're moving lower and lower in ground. But again, it might be just like what happened in the show Pompeii. We keep doing this evil, and then all of a sudden, fire is going to rain down on us. Rain down on us, just like Pompeii. Instead of the situation of us, you know, being in a great flood like Noah, the next one might be a fire. Because we are not doing anything to change this lifestyle that we're committed to. We're not doing anything to create a better environment for our children. We're not doing anything to move out of our situations. We're stuck. We're in that situation. They're telling you can't travel. They got you so scared. Coyotes running the street. So if you go out, are you going to run into coyotes? People bringing lions and tigers and bears into nightclubs at night. You know, you don't know what is on people's minds, so people don't go out like they used to. They put this anti-smoking bill in because they want people to go in nightclubs and smoke. Well, you know what? Is there something in the tobacco a lot worse than it used to be? Or is there something that's in that tobacco that cuts down on something that's in our atmosphere and our air that'll help us breathe better? You don't know. The capacity of what we're looking at, this evil, is just unbelievable. Somebody can have a hummingbird, a little small thing that looks like a hummingbird that's actually electronic, and it'll live right by you, and it'll send a drone directly to where you are and blow you up. This is how dangerous the situation is. But we take it lightly. We take it lightly until we end up on the war field and understand what the act of war is really about. Yes, we have long-range missiles and we do all this other kind of stuff, but then in the end, they have waves of people. And the waves of people can come in and cut down and do things in moments. But we don't know who sent them in. It may not be from them at all. It could be someone here in this country. So now, my question to you is simple. What are you going to take to the table? You have kids. What are they aspiring to be? Because if they go in the entertainment industry, the money there is so-so. It's not like it was before. It was nothing like that. The scary, scary thing. As if this continues, we're on the path it's going right now. We may not be and cannot get any type of way out this time. But realize that your dream can be realized. Because the thing is that we, if we stand together, can do. And I thank you for listening to my show tonight. I think if we support the show with a dollar, that would help. I don't know. I just don't know. We need a newspaper. We need some guidance. We need people of pure heart that want to come back in the community. They're discerning spirits. And that will help us and aid us to move from where we are currently. There's a lot of work here. I don't know. So anyway, I'm going to sign off now, and I thank everybody for listening. And good night. Godspeed.